This week's episode of Watch Out for Fireballs is brought to you by Trent Amond.
Hey, Trent. If you are listening to this, Trent.
Oh, I assume you are. I mean, just because.
Because you have passed the test.
Mm-hmm.
You have passed through the crucible
of
people who listen to this show or Bonfireside Chat.
Or any of the other shows that are supported by the Patreon you backed.
Yeah. Yeah. Trent. I would be interested to see what the... what the cross, you know, the Venn diagram is.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Like, there are people who just listen to, like, you know, one of the loser shows we don't talk about. but don't listen to the, you know, the big daddy and mommy.
Yeah.
As we like to call them.
It's bizarre. Which one's the mommy?
I think that Bonfireside Chat is probably Dark Dad.
Okay.
So yeah. Make way for Dark Dad. And Watch Out for Fireballs was the thing that birthed the prosperity of the network. It is the Yog-Sothoth of Shub Niggurath. Ooh, yeah. I'm glad I got that. Somebody would have corrected me pretty good.
Yeah, but thank you, Trent, and everybody else who donated to our Patreon campaign over the past month. It's been a banner month, and if you're appreciating the audio quality on the shows recently, it's because of a new piece of equipment we were able to get.
Because of people like Trent.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. And if you want to support us as well, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
Mm-hmm.
And even a pittance a month helps us out a great deal because there are many of you. Mm-hmm. Even a little bit makes a big difference.
Once again, that is patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
Snake, before I set myself on fire and have a suicide orgasm, you must confront the terrible things you've done. The men you've killed. The terrible toll we pay to be soldier.
Well, sure. Everybody needs a little bit of money in college.
Now, Snake, only add enough gear to the lawnmower to cut the grass. We don't need a lawnmower that can deliver a suborbital nuke from anywhere on the planet. Wilson, will you talk to him?
Well, Neighbor Snake, the first lawnmower was invented by Edwin Budding in 1827, just outside of Gloucestershire. You know, mowing your lawn is a privilege enjoyed by upper-class Americans, and it has been since the Cold War. I know, because my father was once a lawnmower technician from...
I listened to that episode of Stuff You Should Know, too. More gear!
Snake!
Otacon, the simulation is degrading again. We're getting rerun interference from TBS.
Aw, Snake. I'm gonna have to derez you down to 8-bit to preserve the integrity of the Metal Gear test data.
What? No! No!
Snake, I kinda like you better this way.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a retro video games podcast.
And this week we are talking about Metal Gear Ghost Babel, which is a stealth game developed by Konami and Tosei and published by Konami for the Game Boy Color in 2000.
Mm-hmm. This was actually released as Metal Gear Solid in the United States, but that's dumb. because there's already a name of that. It's like when you go to a street and there's Main Avenue and Main Street, mm-hmm. or like First Avenue and First Street. Like, just don't, you could literally pick any number of words. Like, just make up words that don't exist.
Yeah.
They just need to be distinct. and that's what they, you know, that's what they should have done by calling it Ghost Babel. And also that stands for Game Boy, which sounds cool. And Metal Gear Game Boy. But instead it was released as Metal Gear Solid. So we're going to stick with the more distinct title.
Yes. Just to, you know, allay any confusion that we might have. So yeah, it's kind of telling that it was released as just Metal Gear Solid, because that was what it kind of started as, was, you know, the Konami's European division requested, hey, can we have, you know, just a portable version of that good game? And Konami Japan was all like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But because of the, you know, the system, you know, and the kind of reduced power of the Game Boy, they ended up using Metal Gear 2 as their template rather than Metal Gear Solid, but mm-hmm. still incorporate elements of Metal Gear Solid's gameplay into the Game Boy Color, which, you know, not Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
And they actually even, like, added some mechanics, like hiding in grass and mud, and the inventory management codec system, all of these things kind of come over, as well as the over-the-top boss fights, all on the Game Boy's four buttons, which, like, this uses every part of the Game Boy.
Yeah.
Like, it is efficient.
It uses every part of the Pyro Bison.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's, yeah. And I think you're going to agree with me, Gary, because I know you agree with me. Like, on this point, because we've talked about it ahead of time, like, everything they did was, like, pretty much everything they did was to the game's benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This, like, I had a moment when we were playing this where I'm like, is this my favorite Metal Gear game? And it's not. It's not quite, but it's so good. And it's really does away with some of the annoying things of other Metal Gear games that are also charming. So it ends up being like a wash. Like, this ends up presenting as good a Metal Gear game as one of them on the larger systems, I think, because of the kind of equal parts addition and subtraction that comes with jettison some of the, you know, nonsense.
Yeah. So I've never played Metal Gear 1 or 2, which feels like a kind of a big blind spot for me being a fan of the series. But, you know, so like Metal Gear 2 is generally considered to be like the best, you know, in the early part of the series, right? Like, it's really, really highly regarded. I'm wondering if I went back and played this, if I wouldn't miss some of the modernities that they added to this, kind of the modern creature comforts, right?
You would. Like I've played Metal Gear 1 and 2, and you definitely would. Man, that just made me think of it. Fucking Metal Gear Zero Mission?
Oh, yeah.
Why isn't there a remake of Metal Gear 1 in, like, a later engine?
I don't know.
Or even just this engine, like, the same levels and everything. And Metal Gear 1 is, like, kind of secretly a bad game.
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty frustrating experience. Like, it's unique and innovative, but, man, is it annoying.
Yeah.
And Metal Gear 2 is better. I never finished it. Because it's because of those that lack of modernities, but doing either of those games in this engine would be rad.
Yeah,
that's a great idea. Release them as like a 2-pack.
Yeah,
on GBA in 2004, and there you go.
This is in 2000. Okay, yeah. So all we need is for it to be 2004.
Yeah, like, I mean, it would be a hard thing to sell now.
Yeah,
like a remake of those things, because it would still be, but it would be neat.
Yeah. Okay, so if we just time quake back a decade.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone knows that when you time quake, you can't actually change anything.
Right.
If we time quaked back in that cave, we'd be fucked.
Gary, I know my goof is flawed.
Right.
Which, it's a goof for nobody, because anybody who knows what time quaking is would also point out what you pointed out.
The only thing that it'd only be a goof for somebody who is trying to guess what time quaking is based on the words time and quake.
Yep.
Without actually knowing that's referring to a concrete thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So for the lucky subset out there. I hope you enjoyed it.
You lucky few.
Yeah. I hope you guys dug that.
That one was a treat specifically for you. Gary, I also think that this game is visually beautiful.
Yeah.
Like,
it's great looking.
Yeah.
Like, it's really nice looking.
It's bizarre to say that about about a Game Boy Color game, because I think that by and large they were like really washed out and just they really didn't know quite how to handle the color LCD. There are good looking Game Boy Color games, but not very many. And so, like, you know, I played this on an emulator, but just I was like, let me confirm this. I went back and I played it on just like my Game Boy Color with a snake light on it. Huh, snake light. Yeah. Worm light. There we go. Worm light. That's what those horrible things were called. And it still looked great. Like it was designed to be just colorful enough. And like a lot of those colors actually feature into the gameplay, too.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen a lot in Game Boy Color games.
Yeah, there's just that that one Zelda game
that
had color puzzles
in
it as well. But the late Game Boy Color games are kind of an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like those Zelda games, this.
Yeah.
That's really it. But I mean, because there aren't that many good Game Boy games
is
a thing. Like there are a lot of software for it, but a lot of it's unplayable. But the 10 games that are 10 or, you know, 20 games on it that are good are really great.
Mm-hmm.
This game is fantastic. I was really happy to revisit it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, we talk about it jettisoning some of the Metal Gear bullshit. That kind of comes down to the plot as well. Because, the kind of events of this game are not considered canon. So it stands as its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you try to think of it in the larger Metal Gear, oeuvre, then it gets weird and self-contradictory. But instead, you should just think about this as its own thing, even though it does set up a sequel that never actually came. Yeah. But luckily, the people who were working on that sequel went on to develop Boktai, which is another good late Game Boy game.
Yeah, another good late Game Boy. And then they had a sequel for Game Boy Advance, another stealth game that uses a very similar engine to this, actually. Yeah,
good stuff.
Really good stuff.
Talk to us about this plot that is ultimately has no bearing.
Ultimately meaningless. Yes. Yeah, so this is a follow-up to the original Metal Gear. This doesn't even presume that Metal Gear 2 happened. It's 7 years after the events of that game, and Colonel Roy Campbell comes a tip-tapping on Snake's door in Alaska, telling him that the U.S. government needs his services once more, since a terrorist organization called the Jindra Liberation Front, or Force, rather, Force, there we go, has overtaken the fortress of Galuad. And now they got their hands on a new model of Metal Gear, Gander.
Aw.
Oh, look, little guy.
That's cute.
You're going to grow up to be an awful animal.
What's gear for the goose is gear for the gander.
So they're using Metal Gear. They're using Gander as leverage for Ginger and independence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And since Snake is the only known Metal Gear exterminator in the world, he sets off to stop the GLF. And since this is Metal Gear, nothing is as simple as it seems. There are double crosses and then quadruple crosses. For example, Galilude. How are you pronouncing that? Galude?
Galuad.
Galuad is actually Outer Heaven from the first game. And there is an animal-themed mercenary group called the Black Chamber who enters the field of play, who have a real problem with Snowden's support crew of anonymous fools. And so we'll kind of explore the rest and the twists and turns as we go.
Yeah.
For adventure games, we say that's the kind of the joy. This I feel like this is the Metal Gear where I realize I don't actually care about Metal Gear plot very much. It's kind of fun in the moment, and there are moments of things I like, but like I don't care about the chronology. I don't need to find a grand thematic statement for Metal Gear. I just don't care that much. Them kind of taking that relatively light for a Metal Gear game, incredibly heavy for a Game Boy game. Because it starts with 6 minutes of dialogue.
Yeah, six minutes of cutscene pulled almost directly from the PlayStation game.
Yeah, which is just incredible. Like, what are you doing that in a Game Boy game? That's just amazing.
Yep.
Like, I remember I was watching that and I was just like, oh boy. But luckily, if you're not doing speech, you can just kind of jot through and read it.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit quicker.
Yeah. Although it does pull that Animal Crossing trick of as characters talk, their little bleeps and bloops are a different pitch.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of mimics the voice a little bit.
Yeah.
Sounds like an Aphex Twin song. So it definitely does open up with that. Like, Metal Gear plots don't really matter because they cancel each other out so much. And that is really borne out here because every little revelation is contradicted by the one after it, all the way up until the Kojima dump at the end.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I feel like with a Metal Gear game, if you want to get something thematic or story-wise out of it, you just kind of unfocus your eyes and pay attention. At the end, you get like a one overwhelming theme that's been beaten into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual particulars of how that happens, like, he's just kind of been singing that same song and dance for quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, like as far as the particulars, like the grand theme can change. Mm-hmm. Like Metal Gear Solid 2 has a different message than Metal Gear Solid 1.
Mm-hmm.
But it's exposed through a lot of soldiers soliloquizing about war.
Yeah.
That's the medium that he has chosen, is people talking about war.
Yeah.
As they die. That is his medium. So, and then you can get a kind of a variety of messages. And this being, kind of a guiding game, doesn't really get its own, it's the same kind of theming as Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
It feels like.
But you open up into what is a really good kind of like little gameplay, getting you acquainted with kind of the maze-like nature of a lot of these levels through the jungle, and what actually does feel like the opening to the original Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
down to like guards falling asleep standing up constantly in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you parachute in, and you just have to head north to this fortress through this kind of like essentially like a hedge maze almost is what it ends up being like.
Yeah.
But it's introducing you to a couple of basic elements like your radar, which like is I was playing this on an emulator as well. I own the original, but was doing an emulator partly just so I could up-res the screen a little bit.
Yeah.
So I could see the radar better.
Mm-hmm.
Like the radar on the Game Boy screen is damn near useless. Like it's like enemies are literally one pixel.
Yeah.
It's very hard to make out. So if you can kind of make that a little bit bigger, it helps a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, it works just like the Metal Gear Solid radar.
Mm-hmm. Except it doesn't show you, you know, cones.
Oh,
of
yeah,
sight.
Cone of vision. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't show you vision cones, which, except for Metal Gear 1 and 2, like that, or Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2, that's not a thing in the series.
Yeah.
Like they get rid of that right quick. So,
yeah.
Really, this is just there to show you when there might be an enemy slightly off screen.
Right. Right. Because they're weird. Yeah. Like the rooms are, you know, usually at best like 4 or 5 times as big as your screen.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an element of you can be, you know, up against a wall and can blunder into someone's line of sight pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
Which I found a little bit frustrating. Like, what game have we played? I feel like we played a game recently where if you put your back up against the wall, the camera will pan over to look in the direction you're pressing.
I don't recall.
Okay, because like, that seems like that, I kept expecting that to happen.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like that would have made sense, and it never quite happens. There's no, like, looking around the wall mechanic.
Yeah.
So I definitely got caught a few times, but the consequences for being caught are reduced.
Yeah.
For Metal Gear Solid 1.
If there's anything that the game kind of loses in the transition to Game Boy Color, it's how short-sighted and short, you know, memoried the guards are, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like these are like real defective genome soldiers. Like these guys have there's some chromosomal damage.
Yeah. It's the 6th or 7th Michael Keaton.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, there's these guys are idiots. They're the worst, essentially. Like, the game has very bad AI with its regular soldiers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of like running you around and helping you get your items. Some of those new mechanics we alluded to are the ideas of being hiding in grass and mud, which is something that happens in Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes sense when working with the dimensions that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like being able to kind of, since you have this limited ability to kind of see around you and you don't always have pathing that will get you around things,
yeah.
You need to be able to hide and still make progress.
Mm-hmm.
So crawling through grass and mud does that.
Yeah.
Also, when you run through grass, it makes noise.
Mm-hmm.
So they introduce that like, kind of thiefish element of different surfaces having different kind of stealth values.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just changes how you navigate these spaces. And I don't know about you, but my path through this game was, okay, I'm going to try and avoid everybody and keep this as a puzzle game. But eventually my patience wore a little bit thin. And I realized that if I ran up behind somebody and just punched 3 times, I could just run without any kind of consequence.
Yeah, I punched everybody.
Yeah.
Like from the top, like my rank for everything is like, you know, at the end of, since this is broken up into stages, unlike other Metal Gear games, you get your rank at the end of every stage rather than the game. So every time it's just like, you know, dun, 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 terrible. Like every dun, dun, dun. Terrible.
Womp womp. Yeah.
Terrible. It just kept happening. Like I was like, okay, I get you.
Okay, Metal Gear evaluator, are you Tim Gunn? Terrible.
It was way easier just to, and the, you know, I wasn't trying. I felt like the game wasn't quite giving me the tools to do this as like a serious stealth
for sure
thing. So I didn't feel bad about that. Like, this isn't Dishonored. This isn't Thief.
Yeah. But it's nice. Like, I would love to see if, you know, what would happen if they had just a little bit more power to make the stages a little bit bigger, because this notion of like top down stealth, like they could get that to be really intricate and satisfying in a way. So I was playing it thinking like, okay, how could you abstract what Metal Gear turned into almost like a like that Hitman board game for iOS?
Oh, yeah.
Like, could you distill this down into its core elements? Because this feels like it's, you know, on its way there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still like, I mean, we're kind of ragging on it, but it does work remarkably well. Like,
yeah.
Take any criticism that we have with a little bit of a grain of salt, because this is a technological design wonder.
Yeah.
Like, this is an incredible game for the power of the system it's on.
Yeah.
Like, just very impressive. So even when it's kind of fucking, and most of the problems I had with it weren't limitations of the system. They were design things.
For sure.
Which, you know, could have easily been avoided. Like, everything that we say bad about this game is, you know, it's, again, take with some salt.
It's couched in awe. Really?
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I'm overstating it just a little bit for that, but I mean, just keep that in mind. Yeah.
If we're grading on a curve, this is an A+.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're kind of headed north, and you get to these bunkers, and you realize, oh, the terrain is going to be pretty varied here for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're outside, at the very least.
Yeah.
This is also where you get introduced to your support team. Mm-hmm. Down there. So you have Weasel, whose name is Weasel, and he's always wheezing the intel, and like he's a mercenary. Like a legendary mercenary, and he's, you know, supposed to be as badass as Snake. He tells you that Delta Force, which was sent in, has been taken out.
Yeah. Let me tell you about your guns, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got the gun for the bow dome, buddy. Weezing
Joes. Pauly Shore here in a couple of, I think like in a week or so, he's going to be performing at the Cincinnati Casino.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go to that.
Nope. I've met him before.
Really?
I orchestrated an interview with him on the college radio station.
How'd that go?
He's a dude.
Yeah.
Like, not, you know, just a guy. He's just talking about, like, his movie, though. What was it? Pauly Shore is Dead or something like that. Yeah.
He is the, I just found this out because of a class I'm taking. He's the son of this West Coast, like, trailblazing comedy club owner.
Huh.
And used to spy for her on the other competing comedy club when he was a kid. Like, she used to send her son, Pauly Shore, to go to go spy on the comedy club and find out who was performing, because if you performed at one, you get blacklisted at the other.
Yeah. Okay. So, noted master of subtlety, Pauly Shore.
Yeah. Well, this is when he was a kid. Like, who knows what happened to turn him into Pauly Shore? Like, he originally was just a guy, and then they became Pauly Shore at some point.
He fell into some mutagenic ooze with the easel.
Yeah, he wheezed some ooze. No wheezing the juice. That's got to come back. Wheezing the juice.
I feel like that, like, Borat has had, like, several mini comebacks.
Oh, yeah.
All ironically, yeah. That. Okay, so Wheezing the Juice, Borat, and Austin Powers.
Yeah.
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 Where you can just drop one of those and everybody in the room is going to appreciate it. It is the lowest, most base form of comedy.
Yeah, I really enjoy it, though.
But for priming, like, a room, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
I can really get down to a well-timed My Wife. Like that is my jam.
And, get and down I, to it.
Yeah, like, and I've been very the Austin Powers thing. I keep bringing up Austin Powers. Like, I make doing Austin Powers impersonation like at least twice a week for one reason or another. So he's back, baby. There are also those kind of impersonations where it doesn't matter how well you do it. Like, doing a good Austin Powers impersonation is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, just say the things he says in, like, a kind of British-y voice, and it's great.
That's not my bag, baby.
Yeah, it's not my bag, baby. I'm Benedict Cumberbatch. Do I make you horny, baby?
Are you on Tumblr? I'm Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, I'm Benedict Cumberbatch on Tumblr, baby.
I secretly like your fanfic.
Sherlock.tumblr.austinpowers.baby.
So Austin Powers stuff aside, the crazy thing about Weasel is he eventually starts running out of weapon tips.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He starts offering tips on just playing the game. So, like, he'll couch it in, and, you know, any sound in a battlefield can give you away, Snake. Maybe you should play with headphones to be considerate of your parents.
Yeah.
Okay, G.I. Joe.
That's rad, though.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Like, that's great.
I remember that blew my mind when I first played it.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's only a few weapons in this game. Like, it is a smaller Metal Gear.
Yeah.
So, weapon tip guy is going to run out.
Yeah. There's also McBride, who's uniformly a jerk, and he kind of gives you the political intel of the area.
Yeah. Well, he starts off doing that, and then near the end of the game, he just starts dressing you down and mocking you.
Yeah.
Like, when you call him, you know, for help on a boss or something, he just says, like, aren't you the legend? Can't you do this? tipping his hand.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, pretty hard.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have Roy Campbell and Mei Ling, the classics.
Yeah. The alternate Mei Ling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who was still a grad student in what I think is effectively 1998 here.
Yeah.
Funny. I had something to say there, but I lost it. So let's move on.
All right. Yeah. So you're pretty much just going through these outlying houses and stuff here, going through these various guard shacks and stuff on your way into the actual, you know, the base. And you're kind of introduced to the internal spaces. So like little tiny rooms and trucks are back from Metal Gear 1, which have items which allow you to do this like press up against the wall thing and are amazing places to hide.
Yeah.
Like, and the talking about the AI, like they can see you go behind these boxes.
Yeah.
But if you lay down behind the boxes, there's nothing they can do.
Yeah, they're a sheriff at the county line. All they can do is like throw their hat
in the ground and shake their fist.
Yeah. And you better get used to squeezing through some tight spaces.
Yeah, every time you have a compromised movement in this game, I wish it was like 30% faster.
Yeah.
Cuz there are some parts of this game later that are fucking infuriating because of that. Like you just go so slow.
Yeah.
Squeezing and crawling.
Mhm. Yeah, so you're just kind of running around. Oh, you know what? I know the thing I was going to say before.
All right.
It is not apropos of this, but it does segue out of that. So McBride talking about like, hey, this is a, you know, this is a former territory, blah, blah, blah. This might be the earliest game that I can name off of the top of my head that directly addresses the effects of colonialism.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not even like in the kind of end you know, demands and everything of the bad guys.
Yeah.
That ends up being part of it.
Yeah.
Hey, get your people out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are our own people. Yeah. Which is true. Yeah. But, so you're going around picking up some items. I find it hilarious that it's the fogger instead of E6.
Yeah.
Or no, it's instead of six. It is E6 is what it is.
Yeah. Fogger, but essentially is a future cigarette.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Future cigarette. Vape.
Yeah.
Dot sig. That fogger, which will come in handy for a brief time.
Yeah.
A little bit later in that Metal Gear sense. Does it drain your health?
No, thankfully.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
It's not just like a poison fogger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you find out there is one survivor from the Delta Force squad who is Jenner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Jenner.
Yep. Yep. Lady Chris.
Yeah.
Your love interest and inside lady.
Yeah.
Taking the Metal Gear Solid template.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow her mission was compromised from within. She had to head into the sewers. Here, this is kind of a long chapter. The chapter is very wildly in length.
Yeah.
And this one, eventually you figure out that there's a secret passage inside one of the bunkers, an indented wall.
They're a little bit big on that, like giving you terrain hints, like you have to look for something that kind of like matches this particular pattern or this particular color, or even later on, surprisingly, sound. As an indirect hint. So like what they lose in kind of, you know, level of detail and even size in these areas, they kind of make up for in, you know, forcing you to go back and look for features you wouldn't have otherwise picked out.
Right. Which, like, I would say, like, the big chapter for this chapter 9, I don't like how it does that.
Right.
That's a frustrating chapter to me. Mm-hmm. But here, it's still fine. And I like this next chapter a whole lot.
Mm.
The sewers. Like, this is a super cool, like, just, again, just, like, introducing new gameplay concepts to the Metal Gear experience, you know, with this huge restriction. Like, it's not only is it replicating and you know, kind of making versions of general Metal Gear Solid, it's actually doing some new things, which is really cool that the Game Boy is capable of.
Yeah.
So you're in this sewer that leads to the tower, but they are regularly flooded by monsoons, and you have this issue where you're kind of heading through the sewer. You get a some rat foreshadowing. Whenever rats leave somewhere, it's something bad.
Yeah.
And some soldiers talking about these floods. And then you just get this awesome, like, Game Boy, you know, white noise coming. And you have to grab on these ladders to avoid being swept away.
Mm-hmm.
These, like, timed flood things.
Yeah.
It was, like, super cool. Like, they're timed out really well.
Mm-hmm.
To where, you're, like, you're not going to make it with tons of extra time. But if you are paying attention, you'll make it each time. Like, the best thing you want to do for any time thing is to make it – find the balance where someone feels like they just barely made it and it's badass.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give them too much time, you end up with like I got to the end of the stage of Metroid with like a minute and a half left.
You know? I was never in any danger.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But this does that very well. I think you get that balance really perfectly.
Yeah. And also in sequences like this, it's important that they throw in enough distractions to make you think, do I have enough time to go and get that? So there are a couple of like non-consequential items, but hey, you don't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's very cool. Like I like this part a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also a very modestly timed sequence too. Like it, it doesn't go on for too terribly long. You have to get to like maybe six ladders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also, I love how this flood has repercussions on the base later, which is really cool. Like this is one place that has, you know, like it's not, they're discrete stages, but they affect one another.
Yeah.
In a way that's really satisfying.
Mm-hmm. And what's great is like, you know, it is levels that they are different levels, partly because you are, you know, running from place to place. But like you said about these interesting things, there generally is like one trick per chapter.
Yeah.
Or like one major mechanic that each chapter kind of centers around. So like for this, it's, you know, timing out these sewer runs.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah. Which is cool.
Yeah.
You had to find Chris. She's wearing a red cap. Mm-hmm. So once you get up to the tower, you're kind of searching around for her.
Yeah.
And you get some items. You get your first cardboard box, which is going to become a thing later. And the infrared grids are introduced, which you use that fogger for.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, you won't have to use it for very, very much longer.
Yeah. For sure. You also find out that you are attempting to find Jimmy the Wizard. Or am I cutting ahead? Yeah, I'm cutting ahead. I like all of it is, you know, just kind of here in the tower.
Yeah. At some point, someone tells you to go find Jimmy the Wizard who created Metal Gear.
Shittiest Sopranos character ever.
Yeah. Like, this character is pretty obnoxious.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And stupid looking in his non-portrait mode with his like weird like potato with two toothpicks sticking out of the ground, like torso shape.
Yeah.
Like, he's all torso and no leg.
Yeah. More like grosso.
Yeah.
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 Showed him. Yeah. This is also right around the time when you're introduced to the mercenary squad. To the Black Chamber, which sounds like the shittiest Wu-Tang album.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or the best Wu-Tang album.
Well, no, I mean, just like a knockoff. Like, oh, we need to recapture the magic, guys.
Yeah, that's true.
ODB's gone.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Big Baby Jesus. These are your four animal themed folk. It's your boss rush.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about them as we get up to them.
Yeah.
Because we're gonna fight all of them in order.
Yeah. And again, they have these cutscenes pulling it off with the graphics there, where they're a remarkable level of detail. Showing these, like, they have, like, it's pretty striking how they show you the silhouettes, and it's like, oh, you managed to make like a really effective silhouette with just, you know, maybe like 20x30 pixels.
Yeah, and every character has a really intense kind of bold color choice for them as well. So it takes advantage of the Game Boy Color's limited palette to make everyone really distinct. Same thing with Snake, too. Whenever Snake is in a cutscene talking to somebody, he's just so blue.
Yeah.
You know, that is his theme color. And he's bluer than he is in other, you know, other incarnations. Yeah. But it just kind of works having him be monochromatic almost.
He's blue and peach, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate these infrared grids. They kind of suck, especially before you get the thermal goggles. When you're just relying on the fogger, I can't just, you know, like if you have to stand so close that it's hard to determine if the grid is out or if you're just not standing close enough.
Yeah. And even once you get the thermal goggles, they take so long to like switch. Like then it becomes boring instead of challenging.
Yeah.
There's one place where they do a cool kind of wrinkle on that and introduce like another element to the room.
Yeah.
And I think that's really successful. But most of the time, it is just these patience tests.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we've talked about that before. Like, never threaten me with boredom.
Right.
You know, I have other games to play. Yeah. So.
Or, like, if you're going to stymie my movement through an area, like, make it something that, you know, I don't know, just that, like, that's interesting to figure out how to avoid other than just wait. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fine to have puzzles between me and my goal. Like, you should be doing that.
Yeah.
Don't make it like it's the kind of thing that's like it's hard, but then once you figure it out, it's boring. Mm-hmm. It's like Ancient Dragon in Dark Souls 2.
Yeah.
And that shit's frustrating. Also, these you can't like YOLO it and just run through the lights because then the door on the opposite side will lock.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to play it their way, which is frustrating. Yeah. Like most of the other times where there are tripwires or something like that, if you want to take the consequences, you can rush through.
Yeah.
Here you can't.
Right. Yeah. A lot of these devices, especially the cameras, can be disabled by the chaff grenade. Were you able to get those to work in your ROM of it?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I was glitched in some form or fashion because my chaff grenades, when I threw them, they wouldn't actually chaff anything.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. So
was it just not getting the visual effect, or were you not getting the mechanical effect either?
Not getting the mechanical effect. It would just be like, it would show up as a second of jamming and then it would go away.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. So I ended up, it was an inadvertent challenge run of this game.
Oh yeah. Cause yeah, later they'll become very handy.
Yeah.
Even though partly just for like patience aids, like I can take the long way around these cameras or I can just toss a chaff and run.
Yeah. I was real bummed out because I thought I couldn't remember if the final Metal Gear boss fight required them. Like,
Luckily it doesn't, but yeah.
Yeah. But you're headed back out of the tower and you get introduced to, man, I hate it when you have to fight dogs in games.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's classic Metal Gear fashion.
Yeah.
Gotta shoot some dogs.
Gotta shoot some dogs. But their cool wrinkle is that they can smell you.
Yeah. Yeah. So like you're even more likely to have to kill them.
Yeah.
Because they're going to come upon you.
Yeah. Gonna jump up on. Also the door puzzle with the switches.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Which like eventually figured that out and was fine, but it was real puzzly.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like, wait, why is this here?
Mm-hmm.
That's real. Real unrealistic.
So I figured out what each switch did, like, you know, how it affected the pattern. Like, okay, is this lights out? No, it's actually switching it by, you know, like one becomes four, you know, four becomes three, etc. And I sat back and I was like, okay, I'm just trying to figure it out. And I guess I waited too long. A guard actually comes out and then does it for you.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great detail.
Yeah. There's a handful of those, like where they really pull that attention of detail from the main console games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, even down to like the weasel weasen some tips. Like that's a real main console kind of thing.
Yeah. Weasen the tip. Yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy, who we mentioned, you're sent to get Jimmy the Wizard, who's the guy who created Metal Gear. Yeah. So he's the guy who's going to have a weakness for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of whole point of this area, Jimmy the Wizard.
Yeah.
And
he's a kid. He's like what, 20? In the movie of Ghost Babel, he would be played by super bad era Jonah Hill.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a real sack of shit. You know who he looks like? Guard 24 from Venture Brothers when he's not wearing his mask.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is that is entirely true, except I like that character.
Yeah, I love that character. Yeah, but he looks like him.
Uh-huh.
And he you know, we haven't started talking to him yet, but God, is this guy a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Instead, we have this boss fight
mm-hmm.
between us and him.
Yeah.
And just Slasher Hawk.
Slasher Hawk. Apparently, the entire trick of
on
these...
loan from Mega Man X. Yeah. So
the trick to all these guys, or at least the narrative trick, is they're all minorities or people who were oppressed in some way. So yeah. I have to feel good about throwing grenades at an Aboriginal.
Yeah. it reminds me a little bit of the squad that hangs out with the Pope and Berserk.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, they're all just like people from disenfranchised groups and there's just one person who decided to treat them with respect.
Yeah. Isn't that like straight up? Like when you encounter Sophie later, she says that, like, I loved him because my own father rejected me.
Yeah.
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 The fight isn't too much. He's up on a ledge.
Yeah.
And it's about kind of tossing grenades and predicting where he's going to be and then avoiding his boomerang and then later his hawk.
Yeah.
Which flies around. None of the boss fights are very hard.
No.
In this game, which is pretty, you know, is pretty cool. They all kind of have unique concepts to them, but this is something where I felt the strain of the hardware.
Yeah.
Where like I felt like with a more powerful system they could have done a little bit more with them. Like they're cool because each one's unique and that's really impressive for this. But like you can kind of see the strain, especially with Pyro Bison
definitely.
A little bit later. And what that's trying to recall. Of the design restraints.
Even for this one, bending the game around the limitations of the perspective and the hardware, you know, it becomes about identifying the pattern around which these fly, and it makes it interesting by adding more elements as you go along.
Yeah,
you know, so eventually the hawk comes in.
Yeah, that's kind of how all the boss fights go generally.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get used to it, and then they add a thing, which is good. Like that's a good 8-bit like. Yeah. You know, boss fight.
That's what makes a lot of Zelda fights work, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Or like Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you kill him, and he gives you a, you know, his ending monologue about war and how he's actually not that bad of a guy in honor and stuff in standard Metal Gear fashion.
Dog, you throw a 6-foot boomerang.
Yeah. Yep.
It's
hard to take you seriously. And then the weird little random history lesson
that
always comes like with these guys
whatever Kojima just happened to read on Wikipedia that week ends up in the game.
Just Kojima, why is the chapter on Muckluck fighting contests dog-eared in this encyclopedia? Is it eating or the ear pull? Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, the ear pull.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just read the full text from Vulcan Raven's speech. But this leads to one of my least favorite chapters in the game.
Yeah, the barracks. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at the notes.
It's a real bummer.
Yeah. And so this is when we talk about how whenever the game ameliorates your movement in some way, that it's just not fast enough. Mm-hmm. And that's the issue with this, because it's super trial and error. So we should say what you're doing. It's moving through these. It's like this boxing conveyor belt puzzle where for some reason in this place, they have this very complicated system of box sorting based on the color of the box.
Yeah.
Like very complicated, taking up tons of real estate. Like how many people could live here? How many, acres of farmland is this? You know, this is badly used space.
Yeah. And only like two rooms where somebody could live. So barracks is a misnomer.
Yeah, exactly. It's the barracks for the conveyor belt where they live. And it just, you go through these conveyor belts and you get to a choice where it's like, yellow or red. And if you put on your yellow box and you go one way and you put on your red box, you go another way. Mm-hmm. And this is hampered by the fact that one, the conveyor belts move very slowly. Mm-hmm. Two, you have no way to know which way to go. So if the choice is yellow, red, red, yellow, red, yellow, blue, mm-hmm. Every one of those choices, you very well could make the wrong choice and just kind of have to set through this very long sequence of getting back to the beginning of the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Thing. And then three, you're fucking around in your inventory for it. Like it's straight up water temple shit.
Yeah.
Which is not like, it's not inelegant. Oh, I mean, it is inelegant. It's impressive because there are only four buttons on this controller. Like the select button, which we were bemoaning in, like an episode of Abject Suffering recently, I think.
Yeah.
Pulls quadruple duty in this game.
Definitely.
Like it's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah.
All these things add up to make this a real pain in the butt.
For sure. I think the biggest problem with the navigation here is the fact that the game in general never is able to decide if it wants to scroll or kind of like switch to a different zone, like phase through into like what a new room would be. So if it was all just one or the other, and you were just kind of like, okay, if you go off the edge of the screen, it takes you to a new screen. But that mixture of following the box around, then also just inexplicably taking you to a new area, actually made it really hard to form like a mental map of this area for me.
Yeah.
The complexity of the sequence that you had to hit, notwithstanding, and just the idea that there's a definite sequence of items that you have to get here, including the final box that you need is behind two or three other items. Like it is forcing you to go around it, at the very least, if you do it perfectly, roughly 8 to 9 times.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's if you do it perfectly, which you won't.
Right.
So that's very frustrating. And the boxes don't have a real other use.
No.
Unlike other Metal Gear games. Like guards always seem to be able to see through them instantly for me if I decided to use them. So this is a pretty shitty chapter.
Yeah.
And it's like a neat idea. It just needed to have the consequence for failure need to be less downtime, I think. You have to be able to rapidly iterate on the pattern. So if you're playing this at home, I don't see any problem with just downloading a, YYYRYR, just like a sequence and then just get through it, because it's not fun to figure out on your own.
Yeah. Some hero has taken to putting up pings of every single map of the game on GameFAQs. That's what I relied on for this.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later, because I had an interaction with that jabroni.
That's a weird phrase to use out of nowhere. Mr. Johnson.
Yeah.
Dwayne.
So do you fight the boss before Jimmy?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, no. You let him out. I love the way you let him out, too.
Yeah,
because he says, oh, some of these walls are freshly constructed. They make different noises. Like, wait a minute, what? I can play this game without the volume turned down because I'm in a car with my parents on the way back from Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, you have to make those clicks. Near the end, during the specifically very tedious Chapter 9, I ended up like listening to podcast and then just putting the Game Boy next to my ear when I needed to check a wall. just because the music, like it does a heroic job at not being my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah.
Like it's fine, but I don't think I'm ever going to love like, any Game Boy music probably.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Mario Land.
Yeah.
That music's great.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. That's a good song from that game. Yeah, but the great thing about this is the obvious wall that you would like to hit. So, you know, this forces you to, you know, again, because it is a zone over or so, thinking like, okay, this is roughly where his cell would be. You could actually blow out the wrong wall.
Yeah, and he's like, what the fuck are you doing?
He dresses you down, you fucking idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is funny.
Yeah.
But eventually you get to the right one. And by this point, the conveyor belts are all behind you.
Yeah.
But I had some bad will kind of stored up.
Yeah, for sure.
Conveyor belt land.
Yeah. At the very least, you get the thermal goggles here, which makes a lot of this a non-issue.
Yeah.
You know, at least those laser grids. So it's kind of a bubbling progression of things that used to be annoying not being annoying anymore by virtue of either the world state changing or you getting different stuff in your inventory.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But eventually all the power goes out because, you know what? Metal Gear doesn't sip electricity. It guzzles it.
Yeah. For its railgun. This is a tired point. But this was one of the first games also where I realized how stupid of an idea Metal Gear is. Because being able to walk slow, like have a missile platform that moves slowly, but the big thing is it shoots missiles, is dumb.
Yeah.
Like missiles shoot. That's the whole thing of them.
Yep.
And this game illustrates it so well at the end.
Yep.
It's very funny. Like, there's no point to Metal Gear.
Mm-hmm.
Metal Gear is a false, dumb threat. Like, it is exactly as threatening as an actual missile, you know, because that's what it is.
That's one of my favorite things about Metal Gear 3 or Metal Gear Solid 3 is that it really pokes fun at that.
Yeah.
because you end up fighting the evolutionary dead end of Metal Gears.
Yeah.
The one that somehow is even stupider than this.
than the one that actually made it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this definitely takes the piss out of it in the end, too.
Yeah.
Which is great. Because, I mean, you know, people can launch nuclear missiles.
Yeah.
they don't need this. It's a thing that happens in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. But you get Jimmy out after the, I guess, you know, there's a little bit of room in between there. This whole sequence of events, like my notes are real sparse. It's more just like a bullet point that says a thing I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, it is a Game Boy game. Like, it's pretty, you know, divorced from the cause and effect of what is, you know, kind of like laid out in the codex, which are pretty sparse to begin with, right?
Right.
Yeah. Like, for instance, you find out, oh, you have 30 minutes until an actual nuclear strike.
Right. Which I really appreciate, because we're pretty early in the game.
Yeah.
I really liked how quickly this ramps up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the game is relatively short, which I think is to its benefit. Mm-hmm. But it could have spent, you know, a lot of time just fucking around.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's going to strike. Why would they wait? Why is there all this, like, you know, hours and hours of cat and mouse? Like, mm-hmm. let's just get to it. Like, there's a sense of urgency in this game that there isn't in some of the other Metal Gear games.
Yeah. They're not waiting for Mr. You know, for I about said Mr. Boss's big remains. Oh. I think Mr. Boss might be the studio executive from Wayne's World.
Or isn't
that's
that,
Mr. Big?
Oh, I was thinking Mr. Manager for a second. Yeah, Mr. Big is the record exec. Yeah,
I'm Mr. Big. Also, the alias that Hank Hill uses to mess with Del Gribble when he steals his lawnmower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dad.
King of the Hill deep cuts.
Yeah.
I was so angry they took that off of Netflix.
Yeah.
That used to be part of my yearly rewatch.
Mm-hmm. That's a good show.
That's a great show. Yeah. But you're going through here and you fight you encounter a Marionette Owl.
Yeah. Yeah, who is probably the creepiest villain in the group.
Yeah.
She has two puppets that she controls.
It is a he.
Or he, I'm sorry. He has two puppets that he controls. And his, like, final sting of his villain speech where he fights you is, like, how good looking your femur is and how good it will look on this puppet.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So he's definitely making these puppets out of people.
Yeah.
So that's pretty fucked up. And a little bit incongruous with, like, Metal Gear villains.
Yeah.
Like, that's some Silence of the Lambs stuff. Like, that's not really Metal Gear stuff.
Yeah, they kill people. They're regular killers. They kill for glory, not for secretly masturbating in their basements.
Yeah, it's some Buffalo Bill stuff.
Yeah,
but the boss fight itself is no great shakes. Like, it's all about being in the dark. You know, you can put on the night vision goggles or the thermal goggles. Yep. Night vision goggles are a better choice because you can actually tell apart the three. You know, the puppets are warm.
Yep.
That's creepy. Yeah.
It's real gross. They're animated with owl corpse energy.
Yeah. 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 Just filled with hot blood. But you can see which one you're just mostly it's like, oh, which one do I shoot with having limited visibility?
And what's crazy is when you're looking at them through the night vision goggles, their silhouettes are not at all identical. So that feels a little bit bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And if you have the night vision goggles on, he throws flashbangs. So
yes.
Yeah. This is a boss.
Cool that it changes.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. But it's a boss fight that's predicated on you dipping into your inventory as much as it can possibly make you.
Yeah. Yeah. And the night vision goggles are optional too, right? Like, do you have to get those?
I don't think
there are a couple of optional items in the game.
I couldn't say for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you show up with the thermal goggles on and equipped, then his entire cutscene is just him in a red silhouette.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's striking.
Mm-hmm. But you also lose the particular creepy details of his face.
Yeah.
His death scene is really horrifying as well. Like, he explains basically his origin story, where he came across. Man, this is explained in such brutal detail for an E-rated game. or is this kids to adult? Is this boys to men? I think it's
I don't know. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's either E or boys to men. But like, describing seeing his friend just torn to pieces and bits in a field, like assembling her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it's really incongruous for Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Like it's you know, some Hannibal shit.
Yeah. Did you notice earlier when they dropped a French swear?
Yeah.
Yeah. Merde.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is just a game they didn't review at all, I guess.
Yeah. Well, they probably just didn't want to get through all the dialogue to get to that part.
Yeah.
They're just like, they got through the 6 minutes of intro and they're like, okay, Kojima, whatever you want, buddy.
An effective smokescreen. It's kind of like how some of the Planescape stuff got through.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're just too bored to read all of it.
Just couch this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the after you take out Marionette Owl, the lights are off. And this next little sequence I like, where like you're going through the base and it's some of the same area, but it's changed because you can't see. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to, like, similar, you know, the dumbness that Solid Snake doesn't know how to wear glasses and use a key card at the same time means that you will have to switch around in your inventory to get around, which sometimes, you know, can put you in danger.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a real frustrating, like, Cole is a dummy moment because I didn't realize. So you're running around in these conveyor belts, which, A, why can't you just hop off the conveyor belts?
Yeah, that's frustrating.
B, you have to crawl through the interchanges.
Yeah, I had that moment too, where I was like, I mean, it's a dead end. I can't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I stopped and thought about it for a goddamn second and then realized, oh, okay.
Yeah, Snake is playing this in extended game of the floor is lava in this whole area.
The floor is lava. Metal Gear.
The other thing I was thinking about, if we didn't do the sketch we did, next time we do a Metal Gear game, we can do him being treated for echolalia. because that's a real Snake thing.
Project Babel. Metal Gear. General.
That he just can't stop interjecting.
He's like the Beastie Boys. Well, he just says the last thing that the person said. Like, you know, I've been known to do the Flintstone flop. they're using a walking battle tank called Metal Gear. Like, it's the same thing. He's essentially the fourth Beastie. Like,
some people have called him the fifth Beatle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay, let's table that for Metal Gear Solid 3. Yeah. Huh. Okay, cool. Yeah, also it is genetic too, which is pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Teen gene man. Yeah. Gary,
man, when is the Metal Gear? When is the Kojima gonna do his treatise on teen? Like the four themes of Metal Gear games: gene, scene, meme, and teens.
I just picture Metal Gear babies with the Z.
Metal Gear is doing teen stuff.
Revolver Ocelot. Wickwood Snake. Yeah, I could just.
Falcon and Waben need to go to a doctor because his pee pee hurts.
Gary, I don't think we've ever lost
Snape
the plot.
Snape Wolf got a problem with a vagina.
Snape Wolf is dependent on Bendis ass beans.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever lost the plot as hard as we just did. I really don't.
We're lost or found.
Okay, wait just a goddamn minute. We just wrote the worst fan fiction ever.
Worst or best?
You can't just do that. That isn't a conversation.
Isn't or is?
Okay, you got me. You got me.
Tell me about Project Babel, because I don't remember it.
I don't remember what Project Babel. Okay, yeah. Project Babel. Right now, the only hint that you have is that Metal Gear has something to do with it, and there is this kind of insinuation that the GLF is a front for something that has the U.S. government behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to just like open the kimono the whole way?
Sure. Yeah. Let's get out of the way.
Yeah. So like, just because this is a commentary on colonialism or whatever, it's about destabilizing the region. So the U.S. government is using that as using the GLF as a front to establish Galuad as the new outer heaven. As its, base for mercenaries, so it can destabilize the region, much like God did when he struck down the Tower of Babel and made sure nobody could agree on anything because they couldn't
destabilize
the
region.
Yeah, he destabilized Babylonia, and so the U.S. government can come in and take the resources, I suppose.
Yeah.
The end.
The end. So we're on our way after we get out of the dark. Mm-hmm. Dark building. We head towards Metal Gear, and it looks like a straight shot. We're outside again, which I was happy to be.
Yeah,
to be outside, get some color. However, there's this problem on your way up there, where there's another door puzzle. Which it's interesting because when I went out to this, everything just opened for me as I walked towards it.
Huh.
I don't know if maybe you didn't try that, or maybe I did something wrong or something like that, but like they just opened like convenience store doors.
You know what? I would actually believe that I just didn't try that.
Yeah. I didn't, I don't know why I did. Like, I just like, maybe I just got too close to one of them and it triggered and I was like, Oh,
that's
and then just walked up through.
That's the problem with the women who take the test. They never see the door. Also, I am a pretty lady. No. Yeah. So definitely I was frustrated by that.
Yeah,
because it was apparently unsolvable until I went to try one of them. So I guess what I thought the trick was that some of them opened when you approached, and it just happened to be that, I just made it so the ones that open are the only ones that are closed when I went for it.
I
found a way into justifying thinking that I had solved the puzzle.
You might have. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I just happened to walk through it. I don't know what the actual intended thing was.
Yeah.
You end up at this minefield. Mm-hmm. Here, you get the mine detector, just like it just happens to be in a truck next to the minefield. And the trick to mines in this game is just to crawl.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to worry about where they're at. And hey, free mines.
Yeah. That's the trick in Metal Gear 1 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you get up to the top where Viper shows up in a helicopter because that's, you're going to fight a helicopter. It's a Metal Gear game.
Yep. Ah, man, Viper is wonderful. Insofar as he is so poorly developed.
Yeah. Black Art Viper.
Yeah. Which, is he a witch?
It's because his tricks are like witchcraft or like magic, according to the Wheeze Man.
According to the juice, yeah.
Yeah, according to the juice later.
Yeah, according to Ben Hurt of Hugo. Yeah, so scary things happen insofar as the railgun fires, which here at the midway point, you believe all is lost. And also artillery starts raining down on you.
Yeah.
And Mei Ling, the sweetheart, modifies your tiny, tiny little radar so it'll show you where the artillery is about to land.
Yeah, but it's not very helpful.
No.
Like, I got hit a bunch, and I ended up getting through this through the grace of save states.
Same here.
Yeah, because it was pretty annoying. Like, that radar is just too small. Like, it's a valiant effort. But it's so small. Like, I wish you could have just changed it so they showed up on the screen.
Oh, yeah. Like, if just the squares would flash.
Magic it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been fine.
Yeah. I would rather there be a radar than not, but...
Oh, yeah. Like, I used it sometimes, but it's so small.
Yeah.
And for this part, it was particularly very hard.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. The unspoken moral of this entire podcast series experiment that we've been doing is that there are plenty of games that I can play now that I'm playing now that I think back in wonderment to how did I get through this without current conveniences?
Yeah.
Like save states or guides or stuff. Like I beat this on a car trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got up to Metal Gear on the cartridge. I didn't get past the ending.
Yeah.
When I was like 20 or whatever. Yeah. But I got past this part. But it was just had to do with like playing less games.
Yeah.
You know, so much of that has to do with deadlines.
Yeah.
This episode of Watch Out for Fireballs is brought to you by Kenneth Peterson.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Thanks, Ken.
Yeah.
Pete.
Whichever you prefer.
Peterson.
Kenny.
Yeah, Kenman.
Thank you, Ken. Yes. Yeah, you, Kenneth. You donated to our Patreon campaign.
Yeah, and it's way appreciated.
Yeah.
Way appreciated.
Like we said, July was a huge month for us, and August is looking even better.
Yeah. Yeah, so thank you for wheezing our juice. If you would like to wheeze the juice, you can head to patreon.com/juice /duckfeedtv and wheeze the juice like Kenneth.
Yeah. Yeah. Get a cool little reward. Pretty proud of the postcards we've been sending out. For example, on the Hex Crank cards that I sent out for June's reward, I forget, time is timey-wimey, I wrote an individualized item of a scary thing, such as number 4, Skeleton Goku, or number 19, a pair of glasses that let you see what that restaurant used to be.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have extra ones of those postcards, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got.
Like,
I've got
like a set of postcards at some point.
Yep, I am maintaining them.
Good.
So good. Don't worry. And we can also print more as things go along. Shh.
Yes. Hush. Yeah, so it is a cool reward. And everyone else who hasn't, if you're listening to this and you're not a patron, you should become a patron.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's not very much money.
No.
Helps us out. You get cool stuff. You get to watch our live stream. That's fun. You get to hear better quality podcasting like this.
Mm-hmm.
So you should go to patreon.com again /duckfeedtv. So the juice might be wheezing.
Yeah. And if you don't have the money, the resources to give to us directly, we understand. Money is tight. That's why we're asking for it. No, that is not true. But you're still going to be buying things on Amazon. Go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar and use the link for your region, either the United States, Great Britain, or Canada. And we get a little kickback from that. It is an affiliate program, so it doesn't cost you anything extra. Just like, hey, these guys helped me find Amazon. Give them some money.
Yeah, big help.
Yeah.
And there's also some stuff you can buy at the store.
Yes.
Duckfeed.tv/store and your local supermarket, which you should support.
Yeah.
Buy some
radishes, with the Crick Farm radishes.
Buddy.
So since we can't get to Metal Gear itself, we need to cut off its power, which means that, hey, there's a power station that Jimmy the Wizard tells us about.
Works out.
Yeah. I think it checks out, Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is where we're going to head.
And luckily, the warhead that they fired was fake.
Yeah.
You get this really cool, creepy video message from the general.
Yeah.
The president with that countdown. Mm-hmm. The upper left, which is a real Hideo Kojima touch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a threat. Like, hey, we can hit you with nukes if we want to.
Mm-hmm.
So you head into this power station. You need to head to B1. And as you're on your way, you find out that Jimmy was captured again. There's kind of like, are you talking to Chris? When you do that, like, don't they both get captured? Or is this when you talk to Chris and Chris got away and Jimmy got captured?
I believe it is the second. Chris feels really, really guilty that she let him go because, hey, she was supposed to. you done goofed.
Yeah, you had one job.
You done fell
and
off.
And she's got some survivor's complex.
Yeah, yeah.
Survivor's guilt anyway. Yeah. Kind of her thing.
Yeah.
So as you're making your way through here, you go kind of go through this basement, which has these puddles I like. Again, just talking about how that monsoon from earlier actually affects.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the game, there are these electrified puddles, and these two guards have a very helpful conversation where they say, you know, well, these puddles may look normal, but some of them are electrified and some of them aren't, and there's no way to tell which are and which aren't.
You know, for a security guard, he offered up a lot of information.
Yep.
Second Mr. Big reference.
So luckily you're able to make it through here. It's not too tricky.
Right.
But it's pretty neat.
I love that it, like, causes him to bodily recoil.
Yeah, he flies back and will lay down until you move.
Yeah.
Like, he does not get up on his own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is definitely a thing, and you know this is a whole area that is filled with places you can't walk because the floor is electro lava.
Mm-hmm. And there are also, this is where they introduced the trap doors.
Oh yeah, I forgot about
that. Old Metal Gear 1 thing. Even though in Metal Gear 1 there's no visual indicator of them, which is a mistake.
That is so dumb.
Yeah, that's very frustrating.
Yeah,
here at least like they look like something.
Yeah. That was one of the most incongruous parts. I forget how much we called attention to it. The most incongruous parts of Metal Gear Solid. Why would this Alaskan complex have that in its supply room?
Bottomless trapdoors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that like during that episode, we might have just been trying to get to the end because it was so long.
Yeah, that is entirely true.
It was like a three-hour episode for some reason. So we might have just been, we might have glossed over that. But it is incongruous then. It's incongruous here.
Yeah. But at least here, they have brackets around them. And I guess I never fell down one, so that's why it didn't stick out to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't either, but I noticed them opening up in my wake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can also get guards to fall down them, which is cool.
Oh, nice.
Like if you have a guard just chasing you.
They really are dumb.
Yeah.
this is also where the game turns into all Nikita all the time.
Yeah. 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 I like the way that Nikita's control and handle
in
this game quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Like they don't have a fuel gauge, which is a nice little thing, like nice little concession to the fact that's gonna be a little bit harder control and you can't go into first person. Nikita missiles, mm-hmm. which is pretty neat. You know, you're doing the same thing, the classic Metal Gear Nikita stuff, mm-hmm. like sending Nikita missiles over electrified floors to bash grates or panels. But again, they control well, and there's a little bit of goofiness with like turret cameras.
Yeah.
Like they can hit your missile if it's going slow enough.
Yeah.
And that took me an embarrassingly long time to figure out. Like I kept trying to fly under them. Mm-hmm. And it was just too close to the wall and that didn't work. And you just had to make sure you have enough speed.
Yeah.
Going past them.
It feels impossible. Like, so it turns into almost puzzles to establish like what is the quickest straight shot that I can take. Because in areas that are full of those gun turrets, they often ask you to turn, which reduces your speed until it crosses enough tumble widths to pick back up to full speed.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in general, I like the Nikita sequences quite a bit here.
Yeah.
What I don't like is this great puzzle thing, which like, again, just don't slow me down this fucking much.
No.
Like, and it's so dumb. Like it's such a dumb, like he can squeeze through, but he has to have enough room to like change which way he's facing.
Yep.
Like, ugh.
Yeah. So it's kind of like trying to turn around in an alleyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is really what it is. And these are probably some of the biggest rooms in the game. Maybe they're incredibly large. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of room to cover and just enough dead ends to really make you second guess some of your choices.
Yeah. And that happens with the vents, which I'll start crawling through in this chapter too, where like you just go through so slow, the music drops out when you're in the vents. Like, so you don't get to, you know, you're just understimulated as you, and it's supposed to be tense, I think, but nothing can ever hurt you in the vents. And the only thing that happens is you start going towards the dead end, realize it's a dead end, and have to backtrack a bunch.
Yeah.
And then they somehow thought this chapter was so good that they would do it twice, which is the problem I have. Like the first part of this, I had no real problem with. Like these are minor annoyances. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they're sticking in my craw so hard is because you have to do all this stuff again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so it's definitely setting you up for the sloggiest portion of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And luckily this game like actually ends on a kind of a high note. Like the stages after stage 9 I think are pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah. This ends with a boss fight, which is a Pyro Bison, who is a fire related bison. And it's interesting because you've got I think that you may have been more charitable towards this than I was, because it's definitely trying to recall Vulcan Raven, but if you recall from the Metal Gear Solid episode, how much we raved about that.
Yeah.
This like, it was just too easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would just throw a grenade, move and just, you know, set it and forget it. Like it was way too easy. There just wasn't enough twist to it. Unlike the Vulcan Raven fight where like, you know, his range was what made that, you know, work.
Yeah.
Like you had to kind of anticipate where he was going. Where this with the kind of omniscient viewpoint and him having the short range flamethrower, it was just very easy.
Yeah. And also he had the kind of the cheap out of being able to just fill the room with fire if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And just kind of, you know, create a kill pattern on the floor for, you know, that you had to get away from. I think maybe I was charitable to it because I approached it kind of knowing it was going to be Vulcan Raven. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to hit him with the mines until we run out of mines. And so I just kind of like ran through that sequence, trying to wheeze as much fun out of it as I could.
Yeah. I can't blame you for wheezing juice.
Yeah.
But it's also like, you can do that, but you can also just toss grenades.
Mm-hmm.
Like this felt like it was trying to recall Vulcan Raven, but just wasn't, the perspective just didn't allow for it.
Yeah. Even though Metal Gear Solid is effectively a top-down game like this.
Yeah, well, the reason why, if the Vulcan Raven one, though, is because he can hit you from so far across the room, so you have to switch into first person.
Oh, yeah.
To see where he's at. Like, he just has a really long-range weapon.
Yeah.
Which is part of what makes that work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nikitas also are effective here as well.
Yeah. Even though you have to stay planted when you shoot one, so it takes a little bit of planning.
Real bummer. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
but eventually he goes down.
Yeah, I like his little trick when I played this initially. Him saying how many people I killed.
Oh yeah,
is yeah real,
a little bit of Psycho Mantis stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, he just kind of screams out in ecstasy as he lights himself on fire after he gives a little bit more exposition about the legend, which I guess is you. I've never been able to determine.
It's definitely, well, before he dies, or also when he does his first speech, too, just speaking of, like, incongruously serial killer-like thing, he has this whole bit about how people burn it in different ways.
Oh, yeah.
Like, these villains don't feel very Metal Gear-y. Like, these guys are a little bit over the top. Like, this is the same series that brought us Vamp.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And like, these guys feel, or that guy who shot bees. Like, the underwater guy who shot Bee, the Fury.
The Fury was the astronaut.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Guy is kind of a prequel to the Fury, if you think about
it. Yeah. He's Vulcan Fury. The pain. You know, like, this is these villains tend to be sillier than this.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy is just, they're all serial killers.
Really grim.
Yeah. Here. Super grim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess they are the Black Chamber. Like, it is, and they're supposed to be more Foxhound than Foxhound.
Yeah.
Ultimately. So, like, it makes sense for them to be that grim, but it is pretty intense.
Mm hmm. Yeah, but you snuff out his light, and then you figure out, okay, I'm going to try and snuff out Metal Gear's light, but that, you know, can't be that easy, can it? No,
well,
it can't.
It's important, too, that he says that there's a mole.
Oh, yeah, great. Thank you for stopping me from moving us on.
No, it's okay, like, just because that ends up being important. A pretty big part of to their talk, and it heavily implies that it's Chris, and you have some codec conversations, and you can't reach her.
Right.
So, but Snake has faith
mm-hmm.
in Chris.
As he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then chapter 9.
Yeah. Which this drove me fucking nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's in the same area. It's in like it feels like it's in the last two areas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's such a big area to control. And the idea is you had to blow up the generator, but it's covered with electrical floors.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to find these struts that are missing a corner and place C4 on them.
Yeah.
They're randomized. So that map, that guy on GameFAQs, that map is worthless.
Yep.
He didn't realize that at the time, apparently.
Right.
But there's no way to guide your way through this. And it just means you have to cover the whole level you just covered.
Right.
Like, there's just really no way around it. And then once you finish it, you get a time limit to get out. And depending on where you finished, because you don't know what, you know, what side, it's C4, you control it. You can have a very limited amount of time to get out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I happened to luck out, but I recognize that as a shitty design decision. Like, if I had been on the other side of the map and had to get out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 3 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever, I would have been mad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the placement of these things it's so inconvenient, I guess. Like, you will see like a portion of one. So they radiate differently when you look at them through thermal goggles. So if you're walking around trying to figure out, okay, which one is which, a lot of them are placed at the intersection of different zones. So you're going to see you're going to see one of them glowing and then think, okay, what combination of steps do I have to take to get to the part of this that is vulnerable?
Right.
Right.
Right. And you're still dealing with some locked door nonsense.
Yeah.
Too. Like, there's a key card. There's a door in this area that you can't open yet. And you'll never be able to open when you're here. And it's just there to make you take a circuitous route around.
Yeah.
Through vents, which, again, vents just take forever and are super boring.
Yeah. At the very least, there's one good concession in this, and that is that you cannot see for something that is not one of these pillars. You're locked out from it. I could see that just being a real fuck you to the player if you could just, you know, because it's just vague enough that you might try and, you know, hit something that isn't the right thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just real backtracky.
Yeah.
And there's just something about Metal Gear games where they love doing that.
Yeah.
And it's never, like, it's almost never a good thing. Like, you have to, I mean, we talked about this before, but, like, you have to backtrack with something that changes the context of where you were just at.
Yeah.
So it has to be it has to be Super Metroid backtracking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it either has to be part of a power fantasy, mm-hmm. or it has to be, you know, you have a new tool that makes traversing this different.
Yeah.
You can't just make me go through the same level again.
How about this? What if the flood had progressed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Like, the bottom floor, because you go back to that flooded area, but nothing had really changed with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or the guards were on higher alert, or they had brought in, like, attack dogs, or, even the lights were out, which we already had, but, like, something to change it up a little bit
mm-hmm.
would have been, I mean, having the lights out would be pretty annoying because, like, again, Solid Snake can't wear a suit and
hold a thing
at the same time. Yeah. Yeah. But the, it's just something like that, something to change it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which just made a huge difference.
Yeah.
I feel like you have to do that. Like, if before you make me do anything again, one of those two things has to be true.
Yeah. And it feels weird to just lob the accusation, oh, this is filler, because I feel like a lot of the time that comes from a place of that accusation comes from a place of, oh, this messed with my dollar to play ratio, or tried to, you know, make it feel like I was getting more value for my dollar on this. But, like, really, you know, it comes down to a problem of editing again, right?
Yeah.
There's more game here than needs to be. And a game that so far has been really good about playing it lean and mean.
Yeah, it's a very, like, svelte game, even with this part. So yeah. I could see them just being like, we don't want this to be over that quickly. But they didn't even have to design a whole new area. Just, like, change something.
Yeah.
You know, take away your weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, your weapons get locked down.
Yeah.
Like, any number of things. Like, just do a twist on it. And mm-hmm. also, I think, a smaller area that they could have been in would have been helpful. Because this is a very confusingly laid out area.
Yeah.
With, like... A B and a C tower with different, like, separate elevators and some things you can only get to through vents and
or being even more constructive here, looking at alternatives, make it so that the first time you go through there are certain electrified floors that aren't on, and when you're going back through it, just, like, give me more complicated Nikita puzzles. I know they're working towards that with the Metal Gear, you know, housing bunker or whatever that is. His dorms, I guess.
Yeah.
just throw that in there, because obviously a lot of time and thought went into making these Nikita puzzles more interesting. So,
yeah. And they just ended up using them for the next part.
Yeah.
So it's just, just a little bit frustrating. Like, it's hard to find fat on a game that's this lean.
Mm-hmm.
And just the worst kind of. Worst kind of fat. Or, like, an area where combat was encouraged. That never happened. But, like, give me a reason to get out with that machine gun.
Yeah.
You know? Constantly, like, rejecting ammo for it.
I killed the only guy who was keeping track, so.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Go hog wild.
Yeah. Like, there's just a lot of things I felt like they could have done in a kind of a neater way here. And it's a little bit of a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
But anyway, eventually you get through there. And before you can activate the C4... it's done for you.
Your old pal, because, Uncle Sam.
Yeah, because it is the Metal Gear is about to launch, and you have no time. So you launch, the C4 explodes, the whole place starts coming down, there's fire and rubble spilling from the ceiling, and you have to make your way out. Again, depending on where that last C4 column was, this could either be fine or a big pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And eventually you get out with Jimmy. Jimmy's around, and he thinks also that Chris is with Black Chamber.
Yeah.
And I think he drops the plot bomb that, like, I think he's the one who says that she wasn't there when her unit was killed.
Right. That she wasn't with Delta Force.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And then because he says the wrong thing, apparently his handcuffs have a microphone in them.
Mm-hmm.
And he is 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Explodes.
He goes explode.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
And I don't care. I hate him.
Like, you suck. Give me out of back. Like,
I think at this point too, he is the person who drops the thing that, like, just because we dropped the power for the railgun, Metal Gear can also just launch a missile.
Yeah.
Which, like, no shit. And I think he's the one who tells us that too before he dies.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually have to destroy Metal Gear. Which it wouldn't be a Metal Gear game if we weren't fighting a giant robot at the end.
Okay, we're done. Bye.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we took care of the power plant. That's extraction point. So we're on the wrap up stages of destroying Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Which is, the last one is kind of more of like a stage, and then there's a couple of Metal Gear-y stages.
So you run back up those switchbacks with the artillery guns, and that helicopter from before, that foreshadowy helicopter, is here again, and you see a blonde lady running into it.
Yeah, so you think it's obviously Chris.
Yes. Oh, no, I'm going to have to kill the love of my life.
Yeah. But, yeah, this is kind of a cool fight. Like, I like the it's a little bit like the Hawk one where you're just kind of throwing grenades. Mm-hmm. But I like the bit where she comes in from the side and you have to press your back up against the cliff faces to not get shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It looks cool. It, like, has a nice sense of scale for a Game Boy game.
Yeah. It's got a, for lack of a better word, skybox because you're on top of a mountain or a cliff or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And remarkably little flicker in this fight compared to Pyro Bison, where stuff was kind of like phasing in and phasing out. Like, this is technically pulled off in a way that is surprising compared to the difficulty they had with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eventually you take out the helicopter, which is no real problem.
Right.
And ends up being Sophie. Mm-hmm. Sophia.
Yeah.
Inside the helicopter, not Chris.
Yeah. Yeah. So she is the, I keep wanting to say the governor's, she's the general's right hand lady.
Yeah.
And she gives her speech, even though she doesn't die. It is effectively her dying speech, saying, yeah, you know what? I was the interracial daughter of a French, you know, colonist or whatever, and nobody would have me. But the governor came and assembled this legitimate movement to, you know, to fight for the independence of this African country that he just got co-opted, and kind of introduces, you know, if there is a theme for this game, aside from war is bad and soldiers give all. It is like, oh, you know, we're worshiping proxies, or, you know, just like the people are being propped up as our saviors who are not supposed to be. Right.
Yeah.
Manipulating the masses and such.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. 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 Yeah. I'm pretty good. Like, she's sympathetic, and mm-hmm. you get the idea, like, Snake spares her because of this Pyro Bison thing. Like, him, like, hey, you're the legend. You liked killing, et cetera. And then he lets her live.
Yeah. She sees right through it. He says, oh, I'm out of ammo. And she says, I counted the shells or something.
Yeah. Like, and she was lying before to him where she was going to shoot him.
Yeah.
And stuff. It's like some pretty deaf dialogue for a Game Boy game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you have your last dungeon area on your way to Metal Gear, which is probably my favorite dungeon of the game.
Yeah.
Like, this is where it feels like it's bringing everything back. Like,
it's the final exam.
Yeah, this is your final exam. And this is, I was talking to somebody on the Facebook page recently about Zelda games and talking about environmental puzzles. And I think this is a really great example mm-hmm. of that. Like, this does some really cool stuff, especially some of the stuff with the Nikita.
Yeah.
Things where it's like you unelectrify some floors in order to unopen some doors mm-hmm. to get to other areas and other vantage points to shoot Nikitas from mm-hmm. and stuff. Very cool.
Yeah. And it's just like it's several floors, but it's just simple enough to be like comprehensible. You can hold it all in your head.
Yeah.
As you're going along, it's not poorly, you know, bisected or, you know, cut apart like the power grid is or the power plant is.
Well, and partly just because it's like half the size.
Yeah, that's also
like it's just much easier to get ahead of because of that.
Or like it's half the footprint, right? Like there are several floors that you're dealing with, but there's very little like interdependency between them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kind of final exam of Nikita puzzles is realizing that you can shoot Nikitas diagonally.
God.
Which I didn't realize.
Nope,
it took me forever.
I didn't either. I thought I was fucked. I thought I was going to have to YouTube the rest of the game because I knew that if you threw a chaff grenade, those would just go away. And I could just kind of like worm my way up by going upright, upright, upright.
When you use a chaff grenade, you can't use a Nikita.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. So even for us normals, you couldn't get through it that way.
Yeah.
But really, it's just figuring out that you can go diagonally, which like it was kind of I like that revelation. Like, I didn't feel cheated. I was just like, oh, I just never tried it.
Yeah.
I never needed to before, but like, why would I assume I can't go diagonally?
These doors will open. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. like your character can go diagonally. Snake can run diagonally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the, and it's really cool. Like, you go through this gauntlet of turrets
mm-hmm.
and get to the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is also where you've been trained to try and Nikita these panels. And the last one that you need to get, you have to C4 a wall to take it down. So again, remembering mm-hmm. that is a thing you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a room that they constructed without doors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the way to get into this room, if you work here, is to C4 the wall and then rebuild it after you're done.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Paperwork is terrible. You have to hire the contractor, get an approved vendor. Yeah.
It's like a very weird Dilbert like thing. There's a couple areas like that too, where it's like, how do they build this? This is like a Sims building where you're building it to trap your neighbors. And just like no doors, no windows.
Only man.
Yeah, but you have to get stuff in there, so.
Yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you're working your way down to an absurd degree. Like, you're hopping on elevators like B-50, B-100, B-52.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. And yeah, you just kind of keep going down. And what did you do to kill time when you're on elevators, Cole?
I was listening to podcasts, or I was tidying things up on my desk. So.
Okay. I played rhythm games with a knocking mechanic and tried to make drum sounds that went to the beat of the elevator. But anywho, you head on down. You get to see the room from Metal Gear 1.
Yeah.
With this computer and original Metal Gear.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, you've got it. That is what that is.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
This desiccated husk mm-hmm. of a Metal Gear. And eventually you get down to where you fight Viper.
Yeah.
And he does this whole, like, winner takes all. No, that's later. That's just general. But he gives you a little bit of a plot dump.
Yeah, a little bit.
Before.
Just talking more about his unit. So if we've learned anything from Blackheart's Viper or Chris Redfield, never had a unit because they're all going to die unjustly and it will ruin your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it happened with Chris Redfield, it'll happen out of nowhere. Like, one game, you'll just be Chris Redfield. The next game, you've had a unit and all this stuff. You go from brothers, cop to military out of nowhere. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you find out that the Black Chamber is like the Foxhound that takes care of the Foxhound. Yeah. Like these are the, when Foxhound, they need more deniability and need to do even blacker ops. They bring in the Black Chamber.
Yeah. And they idolize Snake. Like you are the legend that was kind of brought forward to kind of disavow all knowledge of Outer Heaven, which was an American conspiracy at a certain point.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at some point they were fucked over by on the reports it just says Anonymous.
Yeah.
So that's why they keep talking about Anonymous.
I was getting real confused because I thought that Snake was both Anonymous and the legend, which makes goddamn sense.
Mm.
But they are, in fact, different people. Yeah. I like this boss fight a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's real gamey.
Yeah.
Like, the way he moves around and stuff is very interesting. But, like, he sets his whole thing is traps, and he sets these tripwires that you only are able to see for a brief time.
Yeah.
But then you have to still obey. And then couples them with these kind of mines on the floor.
Yeah.
So, like, you get to check and memorize these tripwires for a little while and then try to make your way towards the boss without tripping them.
Yeah.
While also avoiding these mines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It portions the entire level out into a grid that you have to navigate very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's definitely a lot more interestingly paced than a lot of Metal Gear boss fights than you're going to find. I don't know. Interesting. Yeah. Like, I chose interesting because I like stuff like that where it forces you to really consider every move. However, like, it's just differently paced.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. I like it as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and he's kind of a wimp. Did you know he has an artificial arm?
Yeah, I saw that in the cutscene.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a thing.
Yeah. So that's where that's where his magic comes from, I guess. Mm-hmm. Foreshadowing Liquid Ocelot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, also kind of his exposition, he doesn't die. His exposition here is that Chris was the one who was tasked with destroying Metal Gear test data by the Army Chief of Staff. So she was with Delta Force. She wasn't working with them. So she's not in league. She's not the mysterious fifth Black Chamber. But she, wasn't all that she seemed. And that probably explains a good deal of her survivor's guilt, because she's working for shadowy forces and her friends died in a Chris Redfield like fashion.
Yeah, everyone's Chris Redfields.
Yes.
In this game. And I'm glad the Metal Gear test data made an appearance. So the next time we're up to, we're up to the destroy Metal Gear stage, mm-hmm. which is a long, like, walk to the Metal Gear,
mm-hmm.
Up these long hallways, which I really like.
Yeah.
Like, it feels atmospheric. And after you go through this series of hangars, the first part is the legs, which I use mines for. Like, you get these little things where you get to see where the leg is about to fall.
Yeah.
As it's chasing you down this hangar. But again, you destroy, that's the first thing you destroy.
Yeah.
So, like, Metal Gear being able to walk is not a big deal. It's still a huge threat.
Yeah.
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 And then you fight Metal Gear.
Mm-hmm. Metal Gear himself, hobbled, legless, laying on the ground. Almost, I would say, cute as a button.
Yeah. It's a pretty adorable Metal Gear.
His tiny little mouth, like,
I would like a plush Metal Gear.
Yeah.
I wish he had he's kind of an HP sponge
mm-hmm.
a little bit. Like, he takes a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Which is, gets kind of frustrating.
Yeah. they're kind enough to spawn in extra ammo for you because a full snake payload not enough to take them out. However, they don't spawn in extra rations. So, like, it is a weirdly lopsided battle of attrition where they're selective about the way they aid you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, like, there's a... I was never able to figure this out. Is there a sequence that you have to take the stuff out on? Because I just kind of went from top to bottom. So it was, like, the guns and then the crazy little missile bays and then his mouth.
Yeah, there's not a sequence. There's an optimal sequence that you can use if you want to. And they all share the same HP as well. So I didn't realize. I thought I was shooting down individual HP meters. Mm-hmm. So I did all of my damage to the front guns.
Oh, yeah.
Which was not the best way to do it. And I didn't have to until eventually he, like, just starts breathing fire out of his cute mouth. Metal Gear's got a good mouth.
Yeah, get over here, Metal Gear.
The optimal sequence is to go middle, back, front, I think.
Yeah.
But I just shot things in the front.
Yeah.
And eventually you have this thing where he shoots flames and you can only throw a grenade in there when his mouth is open.
Yeah.
The Dongo style.
Metal Gear hates smoke. So the general is piloting him and he's the one who establishes the wager, right? Like I will tell you everything about this plot if you kill me. What?
Yep. Yeah, thanks. I figured you would anyway. All of your friends have been doing that.
Yeah, like, you guys have a real serious, like, both morale and secrecy problem.
Yeah. but eventually, you know, you kill him and you do get this huge plot dump, which most of which we've already revealed.
Yeah.
Like, as we go.
As he was a puppet for the United States government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but luckily, because it's a Metal Gear game, you can't actually have a final boss fight against Metal Gear. You have to do a final, and this time it's Black Arts Viper, who's been listening to this whole conversation and becomes kind of disillusioned at that point.
Yeah.
And wants to use Metal Gear to rain fire on Earth.
Yeah. So I got confused about this. Black Arts Viper is one of those Army Chiefs of Staff who underwent severe plastic surgery to kind of turn into somebody else, I think. That happened to somebody. Somebody tried to obscure their identity by doing that to become somebody else.
That happened. That's McBride.
Oh, is it? Okay, cool.
Yeah, McBride did that.
Yeah, so Black Arts Viper is just straight up the Chris Redfield who was betrayed by his government. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. This is a timed fight, and the ridiculous part is you're on this elevator platform that is going up to the top. Turns out, you know, crazy capability Metal Gear has that you don't know about. He is linked to a bunch of satellites. Which, why missiles if satellites?
Yeah. Yeah. Metal Gear can just essentially do everything, and every new thing he can do makes the last one obsolete.
He's like Magneto. It just depends on the writer.
Yeah, well, it's like if Magneto has the power to control magnet, or like they introduce Magneto and he has the power to, like, change the color of something. And then later, you know, they neutralize that, and then later you find out that he has the power to, like, float 1 foot in the air. And then they neutralize that, and then he has the power, he's the master of magnetism and can do everything.
Yeah.
You know, like, he has these satellite things. Why is he doing anything?
Yeah. Why isn't Metal Gear just a series of satellites?
Yeah, think about all the money you spent on railguns, you idiots. Like, what the fuck?
I suppose Superman would have been the more apropos comic book reference, but...
Yeah, Superman does that, too. Yeah. Like, he's got that problem.
Yeah. But, so it's a timed fight, and it's not particularly hard. For some reason, he can warp.
Yeah, with a flash grenade warp. He moves really quick.
Oh, yeah.
So he throws a flash grenade and moves. So it does essentially, if you hit him on one side, he goes to the other side.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit tense because you have... It seems like it's going to be very tense because you have 90 seconds, but I had him dead by, like, 50 seconds left.
Yeah.
It's not too bad.
Mm-hmm. Whereas I got him down to like 5 seconds or so. And I was wondering, how did I stop the elevator in time?
it just stops. It's connected to him.
Yeah. He's holding onto a switch.
Yeah.
Oh. Neat.
And then some plot.
Yeah.
Why don't you summarize this, Cole? Because I was glossing over pretty hard at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. It is the famed Kojima exposition dump at the end. We got it in Snatcher. We got it in Metal Gear Solid. So all that stuff I said about Project Babel being the plot to destabilize the region, totally true. Also, there's an element of this that is a power struggle between different units of the American government and the army. Mm-hmm. So McBride, turns out, he was somebody who was involved in the original Metal Gear program who wanted to get a new identity so he could reassert his control over it, because Parker, who I think is somebody we never see, wrested control over Metal Gear after the Outer Heaven incident.
Yes.
So Weasel was hired by Parker in order to sabotage McBride and the entire operation to stop Metal Gear and the GLF. But Weasel had a change of heart because he was so happy about telling you about volume switches. He's like, all right, I'm not going to kill Mei Ling. She can go and finish her doctorate or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Campbell, I have no idea what you're doing here. Oh, wait, you were involved with the Black Chamber and you killed all of Viper's men. Gotcha. Okay, that's weird, but.
But it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like you guys. It's a real hand wave.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah, yep. So Gardner is anonymous. Yeah, Weasel. No, Weasel's working for Gardner, not McBride. Unless McBride is Gardner, it is a hot mess, Gary.
Oh yeah, Weasel isn't working. McBride is not Gardner.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, McBride is the fifth member of the Black Chamber.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then you do this like little scene where so all that stuff happens, and Snake rolls his eyes appropriately,
yep.
Which he should do. But eventually, he rides back with Chris, and you know, he wants to just fall in love with her because plot love. But he realizes that up until he met her, he wanted to actually die, and that's why he was taking these missions.
Yeah.
And he's going to go back to the United States and kill all the politicians that think they can use soldiers and treat people like pawns.
Yeah.
In their game, which would have been a cool game.
Yep.
That never happened.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of like Metal Gear actually, or Solid Snake taking on the systemic forces that are manipulating him is a cool idea.
Yeah.
You know, like a Dishonored style assassination thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. Like, you already made Metal Rising. Like, you can do anything you want in Metal Gear now.
Yeah.
Do this sequel. Do Ghost Fable 2, where he goes and kills all these, you know, lolly-loo-lay-lows.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny, because that directly foreshadows what he's doing in Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of weird stuff in this, like, that alludes to where the series was going to go, like, down to as, you know, subtle and as inconsequential as when you do the special mode stuff, you're actually Jack. You're riding,
yeah, which is interesting.
Running the simulations, like, you know, ride and do.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't really do the special missions.
Yeah, I did them when I was younger, playing them, playing this for the first time. They're fun.
I believe it.
Yeah, they range from like defeat this boss using only this weapon to, you know, beat this level in only a certain amount of time. It's pretty good because this is so incredibly gamey that that it plays right into that.
Yeah, it adds a lot of value at the very least.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is cool. Like, I was happy with this as a bite. Like, I wasn't looking for more.
Yep.
Like, I was happy with this as like a 10-hour thing, 9-hour thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's Metal Gear Solid Ghost Fable. So, it's very good. Like, it's a very good game. We kind of ragged on some parts, but in the moment-to-moment, it's very fun to play.
Yeah.
And just very impressive.
In pretty much every regard.
yeah.
Visually, the gameplay, for as much as they hit that word, really holds up. Like you said, the moment-to-moment. I would even say the sound is pretty good.
Yeah, the sound design, I don't like the music very much.
Yeah.
But the actual sound is really good. Mm-hmm. And they use it. Like, everything is used. Like, it is a real lesson in efficiency.
Yeah.
You know, like, it uses every part of the Game Boy. It uses everything that's available to it to try to emulate this bigger experience. Mm-hmm. And I can think of very few things that aren't design related that they could have done differently.
Yeah.
You know, which is very cool.
There, I have a story that this game always reminds me of. And it is strangely apropos to the notion of nations and governments and things like that. There was a time when, thanks to Metal Gear Solid for the Game Boy Color, I was perceived to be a threat against the President of the United States.
Do tell.
Okay. It is the summer of 2000. This game just came out. Chumbawamba was sweeping the nation. We were in love with ska music all over again. Cherry Pop and Daddies were out there having a real gross band name. I was touring Washington, D.C. with my family. And being a chubby 12-year-old, I had a fanny pack that had my Game Boy Color in it, which I, you know, throw away all the other games because I've just got Metal Gear and I'm having a good time. And so we are going into the White House, going through security, and here's me with a fanny pack on that has my Game Boy in it. I go through the, you know, I pop it off and I run it through the X-ray. And then the security guard lady turns to me like real seriously and says, "Where are the discs?" And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? The dis? And then they take me by the shoulders, and slam is a little bit, it's not charitable enough, but they force me against the x-ray machine, and they hold up the Game Boy saying, young man, where are the discs to the game, to the Nintendo machine?
That's great. That's funny.
And I'm like, well, there's only one cart, and it's in there. I am sorry, I can't help you. You can look in the fanny pack to see. So I think that they thought this chubby 12-year-old was going to try and kill Bill Clinton at the time, I guess, with Metal Gear Solid for the Game Boy Color. And so they're like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that we slammed you against this machine. Young white boy, do not sue us. Go through and, I guess, look at Lincoln's bedroom, I guess.
Yep. And leave the test data.
They thought I was trying to smuggle the test data in.
Yeah, we're out. Last time I was on a plane, somebody behind me got stopped by security, and he had this device that was used to measure countertops. And I've never seen anything that looked more like a bomb. And like, they were freaking out about it, and the guy was just like, this happens every time, and he's really mad. It looked so much like a bomb.
Yeah.
It was just insane.
That's why I get nervous traveling out to Portland for our shows, because I always carry a great deal of audio equipment. And wondering, like, okay, it's suspicious looking electronics and lots of wires.
Yeah. Yeah. My last time I went, my took my microphone back because I recorded a Retronauts. It got stopped. So my microphone got pulled.
Yeah.
I think it was only on the way back because I wrapped it in socks.
Mm, yeah.
To make it stop it from being hurt. On the way there, they didn't care.
Yeah. So. I had to have one of my microphone stands swabbed down for explosive residue.
Yeah, they did that too.
Yeah.
They swabbed it.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. That's a podcaster's life for us, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah, it's then them's the threats. But yeah, any concluding thoughts on Ghost Babel?
No, I love it. I was playing it, and I knew from the start, from like that first mission, that it was going to be a delight. And I'm very happy that it holds up to kind of my recollection. This really ran the risk of being like something that suffered for the technology, for the system that it was on. But I was happy to, you know, have my suspicion confirmed that it would actually really benefit from being scaled back as it was.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a real crime that this isn't available.
Yeah.
on Virtual Console or anything. Like, that seems strange to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Konami's weird. You know, the next game we're doing is another Konami game that is not readily available.
Yeah. Yeah, they keep doing that. And Metal Gear Acid, which I would love to fucking replay.
God, that's so good.
Yeah, but there's just no way to do it. Like, it's making me turn to emulation, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make me do that.
Yeah.
What are we doing next?
Well, next we are doing a two-parter on Suikoden 2.
Yeah.
Which is legit, you guys. It is really good.
Yeah, I just started it, and I'm going to drop some real bombshells when we play this, because I'm not very far into it. But playing this and then doing, growing up, like, I played this game, but I don't think I really appreciated it. And I was, like, firmly in the Final Fantasy camp, and this might fuck around with that a little bit. Because this is very impressive and streamlines a lot of stuff. And, like, it's very good.
Yeah.
And it's a very good JRPG.
Yeah, this is my first exposure to the Suikoden series, and it's scratching my Breath of Fire itch in a big bad way, by which I mean the non-standard, quote-unquote, JRPG itch.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it does a lot of things perfectly. So yeah. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
After that, is that when we're doing our two-parter?
Yes.
Or our split EP?
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a split EP on NES platformers from Konami and Capcom. Lots of Konami games in a row, which is great. Give Konami some love. Where we're doing Contra and Little Nemo the Dream Master.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at two different competing NES platformer philosophies.
Yeah. I'm excited about that one as well. Because I love Contra and I've never played Little Nemo. So
it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a great game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Gary, why don't I put in a little bit of waiting music, and let's talk about what we want to do after that.
Okay. Dun, 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 dun.
And we're back from our mid-episode deliberation. And the thing we're going to be doing after...
Remember like the first like 15 episodes of this show where we gave away stuff and we actually had deliberation?
More like the first 50 or so episodes of the show. Oh.
Yeah, we used to have deliberation.
Yeah.
That used to be a thing.
Yeah. We could go away to the decision zone, I think we would call it.
Yeah. Yeah. The deliberation chamber or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, those are the days.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice to see how the old girl's doing.
Yeah. it's fallen into dusty disrepair.
Yeah.
But we've decided that after Contra and Little Nemo, we want to play Half-Life, damn it.
Yeah, Half-Life 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's a cool game to revisit because it's so responsible for the kind of modern corridor, you know, beautiful roller coaster experience that a lot of first-person shooters are. We haven't really done a first-person shooter.
We've skirted it. Like, we've done some stuff that could be considered a shooter, Max Payne or Metroid
like
Prime.
Like DSX. Like, yeah, we've done DSX. A couple things that, like, have first-person shooter elements, but we haven't done, a straight-up shooter.
Yeah.
And this still isn't, like, doing, you know, like, Painkiller or something like that, but it is a little bit closer.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's just very influential, and I personally just want to see if it stands up. Yeah. Like, I haven't played it since the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And, as somebody who's a big fan of Half-Life 2, I want to see if it's still good.
Yeah.
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 Gordon Freeman.
So I'm jazzed.
Yeah. And the stuff we talked a little bit about what comes after that, that's all good stuff as well.
Yeah.
That's right around when that episode will be coming out, right around when we're doing our live appearance at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. Which are we next episode or this? When are we announcing what we're doing for that? Next live stream.
Yeah, next live stream. Probably towards the end of this weekend and middle of this weekend, Suikoden and 2 Saga.
Yeah. So you get to hear what we're doing for that.
Mm-hmm.
What else can people do?
Well, people can check us out on Facebook. That's facebook.com/watchoutforfireballs, where we post about a bunch of stuff. It has remained staggeringly active. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate that. And, I think it's a cool place to hang out.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun place for fun friends. If you have anything to say about these games, you can go to duckfeed.tv/contact and share. That's appreciated.
Yeah.
We mentioned at the top and middle of the show, our Patreon campaign, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can kick us a couple of bucks a month and get cool rewards.
And, I feel like we say it a lot, but it cannot be iterated enough. There are lots of stuff. There's lots of shows in the network, such as Abject Suffering, which is in peak form recently. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, just the shows we do. Check it out, Comrade. And like those damn Ross kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Check out all the rest of our content, both listening and reading. Mm-hmm. All worthwhile. So.
Cool. So this has been a longer episode than a Game Boy Color game ought to warrant.
Yeah, longer than our Boxel episode will be, like our Gator Pinball episode.
Yeah,
thanks everybody for listening, and until next time, what can they watch out for, Cole?
Pyrobisons.
Mm-hmm.
This week's episode, or appendix, or extrasode, or let me retake that.
Okay.